Session number 8227.
Brigadier Rackham, tape 6.
Where we occupied a hut that had been occupied by Ian Hamilton and his headquarters staff.
Was that a very comfortable hut?
Well, much more comfortable than we'd been used to. But again, it could only accommodate the officers. They went, the troops had to still be under canvas. And that wasn't very pleasant in January.
Well, was it very cold then on Imbros?
Yes, very cold. Especially at night.
How long did they have to endure that?
Well, the weather began to improve considerably at the beginning of March.
Did you ever return to Gallipoli?
No.
In the years following?
No. When we were on Imbros, we were told that we were there because the Goban and Breslau might come out. And what we could have done about it, I don't know. You know, the two ships that had escaped up the Mediterranean through the Dardanelles.
Do you belong to the Gallipoli Association?
Oh, yes, I was the first president.
What do you think of that? Do you think it's important to have an association?
Well, I think it's been a wonderful success, and I can't say enough in praise of Edgar Banner's efforts. Yes, that's right. He loved that.
You think he's done a good job, do you, creating the association?
Oh, yes, I think we've had some marvellous occasions with him, and of course the highlight of it all was when Prince Philip honoured us with his presence.
Yes, you've been quite active yourself in the association, haven't you?
Well, I was when we were in London, but since we've come down here, I haven't really been well enough to go up to their functions.
What happened to you after the Gallipoli campaign? Did you go back to Blighty?
Yes, in May, early May, we were embarked for France. And Colonel Wilson, Leslie Wilson was on leave, and the battalion was commanded by a wonderful chap, Commander Ramsay Fairfax, RN. And we landed at Marseilles, and I was sent ashore ahead for some reason or other, and the papers were then full of naval fleet action. And when I got back to the battalion, I told Ramsay Fairfax that all the papers, all the fly sheets that I'd seen were in French, of course, but there'd been a major fleet action. And Ramsay Fairfax said, "Well, maybe we've either won or lost the war, and I'm sure we won it." And that was Jutland.
When you were on Gallipoli in the Royal Navy Division, did you envy sailors on board the ships? Did you think that perhaps that was a more enviable role at that particular time? Or were you glad you were on land in the Royal Naval Division?
We were rather envious of the ships because we knew that they were all living in comfort. But, of course, they had great apprehensions for submarines. Submarines and mines were new things, and the Navy were terrified them, as we well know at Jutland when Jellicoe turned from instead of towards the German fleet.
So what happened to you in France? You know, did you actually get back to England before you went on to participate in battles in France?
Not myself personally, no, because the people who'd been out a long time were given preference. The contingents did go immediately on leave to England, but naturally you couldn't send everybody, and so the people who'd been longest abroad were sent.
So what happened to you? Where did you go?
Well, we went up to northern France by train right across France, And then we were initiated into Western Front warfare.
How did that compare with your experience on Gallipoli, do you think?
Well, it was rapidly modernizing to us for those days, not compared to anything today, but for instance, we were then given Lewis guns, I think one per platoon. I was sent on a course and became what they call Lewis gun officer.
What was your first battle in France that you participated in when you got back?
Well, our first real major action was this last battle of the Somme series, which we call the Battle of Liancre.
Could you tell me about that and what experience you had of it?
Oh, yes.
What date would that have been when you joined?
13th, 14th of November, 1916.
Could you tell me what you remember of it?
Well, the division was on a front of about 1,200 yards. And the ground, the section of the ground was level on the top, and then went down to the Ancre itself. It was a little stream, really, a tributary of the Somme, and then up onto the heights of Tirpal on the other side. Well, now the division attacked on to start with just before this battle. I think I told you before, General Paris, our divisional commander of the Royal Marine, who had commanded the division from the beginning, he was going round the trenches with his staff officer, and he was badly wounded by a shell, and his staff officer, Major Sketchley, was killed. An army officer was put in, a very efficient army officer, I think, but we resented it very much indeed, especially APH. There it was. And now the our brigade attacked with the two battalions on the right, down on the Ancre, from the Ancre up to the on the lower ground, Hood and Drake, and that was Freiburg was commanding the Hood, and then came the Hawk and Nelson. That was us and the Nelson battalion. And then on the left of that was the Howe and Anson, and then two battalions of Royal Marines. And these battalions were to leapfrog through and advance about a mile and a half or so. And what happened was that at night there were thousands of us all, some of them in the trenches, or just a few in the trenches, but couldn't accommodate all, and thousands of them out in the open waiting for the assault. And if the Germans had known that and concentrated their artillery on it, it would have been terrible slaughter. Nevertheless, in the morning we went over, and the Hood and Drake got on marvellously down below there. We were up on the level ground, and there was one strong point that was certainly not eliminated by the fire, and the Nelson and Hawke battalions were destroyed, virtually. We went in 20 officers and 415 ratings. The casualties were 23 officers, because we had some reinforcements up, 23 officers and 396 ratings. And the Nelson had similar. The two battalions on the left suffered too from this strong point, and some, just a few, got through, and then they were cut off. And so you had this situation, Hood and Drake doing marvellously, advancing, and two battalions in the middle destroyed, and a thin line through on the left. I was had been Lewis gun officer, so my job was to take up an ammunition party after the assault had gone over. Well, I went over and I got hit through the hand, but not much. Got back to the first aid post and had a bandage up, and then went back to the battle. But there were hardly any troops, and I was told to, whatever troops I could get hold of, to stop them from cutting off the Hood and Drake, because there were these people in a strong point. We thought about 50 probably being there, Germans, and there was no one else to assault them there. Then we heard that they were going to assault in the morning with tanks. Now, tanks were in their infancy then. They'd been used in September in the earlier battles of Somme, and we were given 6 tanks in the division to be used if we got into trouble. Well, we were in trouble, and so they were to come up and assault the strong point. Alan Campbell, Commander Alan Campbell, son of Campbell, the actress person, he led the tanks up. Only 2 arrived on the strong point, mobile, but when they did arrive on the strong point, up came the white flags, and well, it's alleged it was 400. I would say about 200 or 300 at the most. Germans surrendered like that.
The tanks did it, did they? The appearance of the tanks?
Well, I think the tanks just frightened them. They couldn't do really much themselves. They were very thinly armed then, with guns and so on. But anyhow, they just arrived on the strong point, and up came all these white flags, and the Germans surrendered. A.P. Herbert had come up. He was left behind. You always had to leave a certain number of officers and men out of action, so that you got something to go on afterwards. But A.P. Herbert had come up since then with the second command. The second in command was wounded at once, and APH and I went on up to the village of Beaucourt, and the Hood and Drake were just about to assault Beaucourt, the village of Beaucourt. They did assault it, and we were in it, and the Germans in Beaucourt surrendered, in hundreds. Surrendered, most extraordinary. Freiburg was severely wounded in the end. I had led his battalion with terrific bravery, and of course everybody knew he would get the BC, which he did. And having said that, I don't think there was others that weren't brave. There were a tremendous number of people got DSOs and so on. And then when this strong point was eliminated, of course the Howe and Anson and Marines were able to go up and reinforce on the left and join up in the middle where there was nobody, where the Hawk and the reserve brigade had also come in, so that we were pretty strong then. And indeed we made the longest advance possible, the longest advance in the whole of the Somme battles.
And that was the Royal Naval Division?
That was the Royal Naval Division. Well, mind you, there were people on our left assaulting as well, but they didn't get on quite so well.
Your losses were pretty great then, though. Am I right? Your losses were very great battle.
Well, you see, they were tremendously severe in those assaulting battalions. Almost all the casualties fell on those assaulting battalions. And it was the days of the creeping barrage, and you were told to keep right up to the barrage, keep up to the barrage. And the trouble was those, I wasn't actually in the front line because I was to come on afterwards with his ammunition. But the officers who were up the barrage said it wasn't a question of keeping up the barrage. The troops wanted to get too near it, and there were casualties from it. Our own barrage, but that couldn't be helped.
What were the conditions of fighting like then in November in the Ancre region? What was the ground like?
Mud, really, especially in the Ancre Valley. I could show you pictures of it when we went round afterwards. But there were three, I've given several lectures about this to my when I was commanding brigade and battalions and that. There were three very illuminating lessons in that battle. One was that you never could, and quite understandably, rely on the gunners to eliminate all the opposition. They'd had a terrific pounding, and I imagine that's why they surrendered. But a terrific pounding, but it hadn't destroyed these marvellous dugouts which the Germans had got with machine guns on trolleys which went down and up. The machine came up when it was ready. And the you couldn't rely on the gunners to eliminate everything. And secondly, that the machine gun, automatic fire, and the barbed wire with it dominated the battlefield at that time. And the third thing was that the arrival of the armored vehicle, the tank, was the beginning of the answer to the automatic fire, used in a most extraordinary way, and certainly not like it was at Cambrai, but nevertheless, these tanks, as soon as they appeared, the Germans surrendered.
That's very interesting, hearing you say it was the beginning of the answer, which implies there was tremendous improvement in tank warfare as the war progressed.
Oh, yes, tremendous improvement. That was March 17. Well, then, of course, in 1918, the tanks were in great numbers then and were used in the advance of victory, were used tremendously.
The strategy was better, was it, as well as the technology
towards
the end of the war?
Yes.
Well, that's a very interesting account, and thank you very much. Did you participate in any other actions in France you could tell us about? Any other major actions?
Well, we of course, after that battle, we had to go back behind the reserve and we got reinforcements and so on, and then we came back into the line again at the same place at just above Beaucourt, and this was in February, early February 1917, and the conditions there was the coldest winter we've ever had, terrible, and the conditions in the well, there wasn't really a front line, there wasn't a continuous trench, but these little holes that we had, you just couldn't dig anymore. It was all hard as bricks.
Did that make you very vulnerable, the fact that you couldn't dig?
Yes, it did. We had considerable casualties.
How did you compare these experiences on the Western Front with your Gallipoli experience?
Well, as far as I was concerned, of course, the casualties were very much heavier in the big battles in France. But they had been just as severe in the early days of the landing at Gallipoli, just and in the general assaults, as Arthur Watts will tell you.
Were you at Gavrelle?
I was very much at Gavrelle, yes.
Could you tell us about that? Where was Gavrelle?
Gavrelle was soon after the assault of Vimy Ridge by the Canadians, and in the Arras area. And this is the time when Freiburg was promoted brigadier and left us to go to the 29th Division, and Arthur Asquith virtually deserted his staff appointment and came and took over command of the Hood Battalion in the Battle of Gavrel.
You would have still been with the Hawk Battalion then, am
I was
right?
With the Hawk Battalion as assistant adjutant to APH. A.P. Herbert was the adjutant.
Could you tell us what you remember of that battle, Gavrel?
Well, the Marines and the Hood and Drake were the assaulting troops. We were in support. And after the battle had happened, after the assault had taken place, we were told to move up into the captured German line. And so we moved up in artillery formation. Our little headquarter party consisted, of course, of the commanding officer, A.P. Herbert, and the adjutant and myself as assistant adjutant, and a few signalers and others. On the way up, the shelling was pretty severe, and one shell landed very close to us. A.P. Herbert was wounded, and the commanding officer was wounded, and he was evacuated, and on the way down was hit again and mortally wounded. That was Colonel Whiteman. We got APH up into the German front trench, and he wouldn't go until we'd got a more senior officer to come and take over the battalion, because I was left at the headquarters. So eventually he was evacuated, and the battalion then went up in support of the assaulting troops. Again, we gained all our objectives, but there was very severe fighting by the Royal Marines over what we call the windmill, which I think you'll see a picture of the windmill in Gerald's book. The Marines eventually assaulted it, but not only after terrific casualties. But we obtained all our objectives, and Asquith got another DSO there, Arthur Asquith, and the Dr. McCracken of the Hood Battalion did a marvellous job with that. He established a first aid post in the mayor's in the cellar of the mayor's house in Gavrel, and he the Germans had a first aid post there, and there were some medical people of the Germans, and he made them come in and help him with the wounded, both Germans and British, of course. He was awarded a DSO. I think Asquith thought he ought to have a VC.
You were saying you had achieved your objectives. What were they at Gavrel?
Well, again, an advance of about a couple of miles or so, and a capture of Gavrel and the windmill itself. And there we consolidated.
Were there many casualties again to that operation?
Yes, our casualties were not so severe. The Hood and the Marines were very severe, but our casualties in the Hawk were not, I think about 30% perhaps.
I think I'm right in saying that you had the MC in Bar. Is that right? You had
yes,
the MC.
Yes.
Where did you gain that, Brigadier?
Well, I gained the. I'm sure no end of other people ought to have had things, but I was awarded that in a battle which took place in the one when I said the ground was so hard that we couldn't dig, we were then told to assault the first two trenches of the Germans that they were holding beyond Beaucourt, which we did. And I was a Lewis gun officer still, as well as assistant adjutant, and went round the front line sighting the Lewis guns, I suppose in considerable danger. But anyhow, that was my military cross.
How did you react to having a military cross? Were you very proud?
Well, I thought it was undeserved, because so many others ought to, just as brave.
Fully.
And the second one was in the German offensive of 1918, March and April 1918. At this time I was adjutant. And of course we were up in the what was called the Flakier salient. I can't spell Flakier, but Gerald spells it in there somewhere. And in the March offensive, we weren't actually assaulted, but we were most terrifically heavily gassed, gas shells, phosphine and mustard gas.